this trip, the Israeli occupation army targeted a home that is housing displaced families in Al-Nusayrat refugee camp and in Al-Zawaida refugee camp, that resulted in the killing of 13 of the same family, Abu Dahrouj family. The injuries were many, actually, and the influx of the ambulances, as you may see in the background, continues until now as the search for the people who are injured, who are stuck under the rubble of the destroyed building, continues until this moment. So we are talking about a big massacre, a very appalling massacre that is appalling only for the people in Gaza City, not to the world, as you know. And this situation has been the normal for the people in Gaza. Another massacre was committed against a family, Wadi family, in the south of the strip in Khan Yunis City, that resulted after the Israeli occupation army targeted a home belonging to Wadi family. Four of the same family, a whole family, the mother, the father, and the children were completely killed, and totally the whole family was wiped out from the civil registry. So another massacre was also committed against the civilians in Al-Nusayrat refugee camp.
More countries are deploying their naval vessels to help the Gaza-bound aid flotilla, known as the Global Samud Flotilla, sail safely toward the besieged Palestinian territory. Following suit with Italy, Spain has become the second country to send a military warship to protect the humanitarian mission.
The right of our citizens to navigate the Mediterranean Sea in safe conditions should be respected. That is why I inform you that tomorrow a maritime action ship will set sail from Cartagena, equipped with all the essential resources in case it becomes necessary to assist the flotilla or carry out a rescue.
Sanchez said Spain and 14 other countries have informed Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that their citizens on board the flotilla are under political and diplomatic protection. He added that if the flotilla encounters difficulties, those on board could be rescued by the Spanish naval vessel. Spain's move came after Italy announced it was sending a Navy vessel to provide full assistance to the flotilla. Italy's decision represented the first direct intervention by European governments to protect humanitarian ships attempting to break Israel's blockade of Gaza. It followed overnight drone attacks on the aid-carrying vessels off the coast of Greece. The Global Samud Flotilla is using about 50 civilian boats with citizens from 45 countries on board. An Italian lawmaker has raised a question in Parliament asking the Italian government for explanations over media allegations that hundreds of Italians have joined Israeli forces in the ongoing genocide in Gaza. This as a lower house session was suspended on Wednesday following an Israeli attack on the Gaza-bound Global Samud Flotilla in international waters. Max Civili has details from Rome.
Italy's opposition five-star movement lawmaker Stefania Ascari has submitted a parliamentary question to Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani and Interior Minister Matteo Piantedosi, requesting explanations over some media reports alleging that about 1,000 Italian citizens, including those with dual Israeli passports, have joined Israel's occupation forces after October 7, 2023, and have participated in the ongoing genocide in the Gaza Strip. Lawmaker Ascari said on Wednesday that the Italian government has a duty to ensure respect for international humanitarian law and the principles enshrined in the UN Genocide Convention.
The allegations are extremely serious. There could even be more than 1,000 Italian citizens involved. We demand to know the extent of Italy's complicity with terrorist Israel and its genocide in Gaza. We demand answers.
This is how Israel cares about Italian soldiers. About a year ago, Israeli forces started targeting UNIFIL positions in southern Lebanon with three attacks on Italian bases. Italy's defense minister Guido Crosetto called the attack a war crime and summoned the Israeli ambassador to Rome to lodge a formal complaint. Two Italian soldiers were injured in that attack.
Terrorist Israel is in constant breach of international norms. The Israelis think that they are above the law. They are wrong. They have bombarded embassies, sovereign countries. They have attacked Iran, Qatar in the middle of the negotiations. And now several vessels were targeted by Israeli drones off the coast of Greece.
On Wednesday, a session of the Italian lower house was suspended after a group of opposition lawmakers, including Stefania Ascari, occupied the government benches, demanding that a member of the executive report on the attack on the Global Sumud Flotilla in international waters overnight. The Global Sumud Flotilla, comprising around 50 civilian boats attempting to break Israel's naval blockade of Gaza and deliver humanitarian aid, came under attack in the early hours of Wednesday when, according to organizers, drones dropped explosive devices near several boats, causing no injuries.
Loro pietiscono.
Our ministers beg Israel when they should demand security measures for the Italian citizens on board the flotilla. Israel's assault on the flotilla happened in international waters, and it's an act of piracy. It's a crime. In a motion presented some time ago, we said Netanyahu must be stopped, sanctions must be imposed on Israel, and all accords with Tel Aviv must be suspended.
In the aftermath of the attack on the flotilla, the Italian government deployed a multi-purpose frigate to head towards the flotilla for possible rescue operations, focusing primarily on Italian citizens. Max Civilip, Rome.
The Spanish government has taken a decisive step against Israel, approving a complete arms embargo and further restrictions on trade linked to illegal settlements. The move comes after weeks of international pressure and is being presented as part of Spain's commitment to peace and international law.
Spain has approved urgent measures against the ongoing genocide in Gaza, standing firmly for human rights and international law. Economy Minister Carlos Cuerpo highlighted the human toll, over 65,000 killed, 165,000 wounded, and 2 million displaced. Thousands of children face malnutrition. Madrid pledges to lead international pressure on Israel, demanding accountability and pushing for a just and lasting peace.
Spain's new decree, awaiting approval by the Congress of Deputies, enforces a total arms embargo on Israel, prohibiting all defense exports and imports, as well as dual-use products and technology. It also denies transit of aircraft fuels with potential military use and bans imports from illegal Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories. Advertising of such goods and services is also forbidden, and existing or pending authorizations are revoked.
The minister called on Spain to continue leading international efforts to confront the crisis in Gaza and to ramp up pressure on the Israeli regime. As announced by the Prime Minister and highlighted at this week's UN General Assembly in New York, Madrid aims to hold Israel accountable for its ongoing attacks on Palestinian civilians.
No es el final del camino.
I want to make two proposals. First, the state of Palestine must become a full member of the United Nations, and its integration should be completed as soon as possible. Second, we must take immediate action to halt the brutality and make peace possible. Spain will implement a plan to stop the genocide in Gaza, and will continue taking courageous measures with any who wish to join. History will judge us, and its verdict will be harsh on those who committed this atrocity, and those who remained silent.
The Spanish government has become one of Europe's most outspoken critics of the Israeli regime, leading initiatives that openly reject and condemn its genocidal policies in Gaza, as well as the ongoing expansion of Israeli settlements in the West Bank.
Thanks to popular pressure, Spain has approved a total arms embargo on Israel. We will not allow companies or military supplies that fuel the Palestinian genocide to enter our ports or airports. We will remain firm and strengthen the law to close any loopholes.
Spain is now the first EU country to impose a full arms embargo on Israel, a move officials call both symbolic and practical. It highlights Madrid's push for human rights and peace, while raising the question of whether other European nations will follow its lead. Alberto García, Málaga.
Mahdias Vandiyadi, an Iranian academic, has now been detained in France for 7 months amid growing calls for her release. As diplomatic efforts continue for her release, activists and Esfandiari's family highlight the broader issues of free speech and political motivations behind her continued imprisonment.
Today marks the 210th day since the illegal detention of Iranian academic Mahdias Esfandiari in France. She was living in Lyon when she was arrested by French security officers after a surprise raid at her home on February 28th. Her family described it as a case of kidnapping or hostage taking, saying the officers arrived unannounced, bundled her into a van, and held her without charge. French authorities refused for an entire month to provide detailed information to the Iranian Foreign Ministry, which intervened at the family's request. For more than 50 days, she was denied any phone access, kept in solitary confinement, and prevented from contacting her family or friends. This continued until mid-April. According to Mahdia's communication with her family, her interrogation inside French police custody quickly turned into a systematic psychological torment. They also stripped her of her hijab. The young woman is accused of advocating terrorism for having participated in a Telegram channel denouncing the ongoing genocide in Gaza. To justify her continued detention, some investigators claimed that she was acting under Iran's influence and that this was a case of interference, accusations her lawyer has denounced as unfounded and purely political. Iranian authorities have repeatedly called for her release, describing her detention as unjust and politically motivated. Since her imprisonment, two requests for conditional release have been rejected, first by the Paris court in June and then by the Court of Appeal in July. Activists, neighbors, and supporters of Esfandiari are denouncing what they see as a serious violation of freedom of speech. They say her case lays bare the blatant violation of human rights and the complete absence of genuine freedom of expression in the West, including in France. Esfandiari's imprisonment is now gaining increased attention as calls grow for her immediate release.
Iranian Foreign Minister Seyed Abbas-Araghchi has met with his French counterpart Jean-Noël Barrot on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly in New York as part of ongoing diplomatic consultations. The talks revolved around initiatives to prevent the reimposition of previously lifted UN Security Council resolutions. Earlier on Wednesday, Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian also held a meeting with French President Emmanuel Macron. They discussed bilateral relations and expressed optimism that addressing current challenges could pave the way for more cooperation in the near future. On the nuclear issue, President Pezeshkian reiterated that Iran is not pursuing nuclear weapons. He underscored Tehran's readiness to engage with European partners within a mutually acceptable framework to promote dialogue on its peaceful nuclear program. At the UN General Assembly, Iran's President Masoud Pezeshkian made his speech with a sharp condemnation of Israel.
Our world in this way, let's take a look at the world in the past 2 years. We've been witness to a genocide in Gaza. We've been witnessing the destruction of homes and repeated violations of sovereignty and territorial integrity in Lebanon. We have seen destruction of infrastructure in Syria, attack against the Yemeni people. We've been witness to starvation of little kids. And also aggression against the sovereignty of other nations and aiming the leaders of countries. And all this has been actually by the support of the most armed regime in the world, and that's under the excuse of self-defense. Do you prefer this for your own self? Who is destabilizing the region and the world, and who is a threat against global peace and security? Who is violating the golden rule of human morals, Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen? All of you have been witness that a few months ago my country came under violation in contravention of international law. Airstrikes of the Zionist regime and also those of the United States against cities, homes, and infrastructure in Iran.
President Pezeshkian saved his strongest criticism for Israel and its allies, saying they try to impose their will. He called Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu a criminal and labeled U.S.-Israeli war on Iran as a grave betrayal of diplomacy. Pezeshkian also warned that the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza would affect all countries if it continues. On the issue of Iran's nuclear program, Pezeshkian stated that the country does not seek a nuclear bomb, citing a religious fatwa as proof. The Iranian president also met with his French counterpart on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly. Pezeshkian and Macron discussed Iran-IAEA ties and the activation of the 2015 nuclear deal's snapback mechanism. The White House has instructed federal agencies to prepare for extensive job losses in the event of a government shutdown, as the Trump administration is seeking to shrink the size of the federal workforce. The budget office directed agencies to identify programs lacking discretionary funding if Congress fails to enact a budget by the September 30th deadline. The guidance mandate said agencies submit their proposed reduction in force plans. A senior Democratic official condemned the instruction, characterizing it as an intimidation tactic. Democrats and Republicans are locked in a standoff as government funding is on the brink of expiring. Since assuming office in January, President Trump has initiated efforts to reduce the federal workforce. Denmark has rather closed a major airport in the north amid heightened security concerns following drone incidents. Eyewitnesses reported observing green blinking lights hovering over the Aalborg Airport late Wednesday. The closure has impacted military operations as Aalborg serves as a base for Denmark's armed forces. The airport closure occurred just 2 days after a similar incident in Copenhagen, triggered by sightings of drones in its airspace. Denmark has labeled the recent drone disruptions as the most serious attack on its critical infrastructure. The situation reflects security concerns in the region, with Estonia, Poland, and Romania accusing Russia of violating their airspace with drones and fighter jets. Russia has denied these claims. Moscow says its aircraft remained in neutral airspace and complied with international aviation rules. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Say, like questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum and a very warm welcome. This is IRIB English Radio and you're listening to Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we answer questions, queries that are related to the Islamic upbringing of the children, and the answers are given by the experts who have a specialization in the similar field. Well, today in our studio, we have had the pleasure to be with Brother Liaqat Abbas. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam, sister.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you so much.
Brother Liaqat is a research scholar in the House of Ilmi of Qom, and our answers are based upon the Holy Book of Quran and the Hadith from Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his purified family, and also the narrations from noble imams, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon them. Well, in the previous episode, he told us that it is the lack of knowledge. It is a lack of ma'rifah towards the Prophet, towards the imams, that keeps us away from obedience. So I would want you to continue today. How is it? Could you expand more on that?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So, example, I would say, I don't know a person. I've just heard about him that he's a good person. That's it. And it's been told to me from my childhood that I have to love that person, and I love that person. So I would say subconsciously and back of my mind, I know that I love a certain person.
Right.
Okay. So okay.
But why you don't know?
But why I don't know about that person as well? I don't know much about him.
Right.
Okay. I just know that okay, he's a good one, and I really kind of have inclination towards him.
Right.
And whatever he says should be obeyed. Example. Okay.
Right.
This is the example when it comes to the lives of the imams, alayhim assalam. If I ask a teen, example. I ask him about the life of Imam Hussein alayhi salam himself, okay, except for the martyrdom and maybe a few points here and there.
Right.
A person doesn't know much about Imam Hussein right. alayhi salam as well. Even about Imam Ali alayhi salam. I would ask about those 25 years after the Shahadat of Rasulullah, after
right.
the martyrdom of Rasulullah. What do you know about Imam Ali alayhi salam? 25 years is a lot. Is a lot.
Yes.
About Amirul Mu'mineen, the successor of Rasulullah, do we really know much about him? Is a question. Okay. Just because I love Imam Ali alayhi salam and I obey him, that's okay. That's a good point. Okay. But the thing is not sufficient. I'm lacking something in myself.
Okay.
I have to look into myself. And you know, when a person knows the opposite person, the more he knows, the more the inclination rises, the more the inclination rises, the more the obedience towards the person and his words will increase. Example, what happens in addiction is a question, right? Example, in addiction, what happens is a person in the first place doesn't have any kind of
knowledge.
Inclination about it, okay?
Right.
Example, there's alcohol. I would say a person who never drank alcohol, do you have inclination towards alcohol?
No.
The person will say, definitely no. Okay? But when he drinks it, he gets the knowledge of alcohol. I'm just giving an example. Okay? So when he drinks, he gets an inclination towards it. The more he drinks, the more he gets addicted. Okay? This is about the bad things. Okay, well, I'm giving...
And especially like about, if we can give a very tangible example today, it's like kind of, especially for the teenagers, it's like social media.
Social media.
They are into the, yeah, they are into the apps like, or scrolling without any purpose, and for hours, hours, hours there, and they are there because they entered it.
Exactly. The reason I have taken an example of something which is haram is because even if a person who is a Shia, okay, I have spoken to a few people who are Shias and unfortunately who drink alcohol. And I spoke to them and asked them about the reason of why they are still drinking alcohol. Few amongst them told me a surprising answer. They were like, they don't want to, but they can't stop drinking. You see, they don't want to drink alcohol. The same goes with all the haram activities as well. Like there are a few teens who want to stop committing haram acts, but they cannot. Why? Because they got, in a way, inclined towards it. They got addicted towards it. Okay?
Right.
So this is the bad part, like getting inclined towards haram activities. And there's a good part as well, getting inclined towards the good activities or good deeds as well.
Now let's talk about good part, but after a short break, dear listeners, stay tuned.
Give thanks to Allah for the moon and the stars. Praise Him all day for what is and what was. Take hold of your iman. Don't give in to Shaitan. Oh, you who believe, please give thanks to Allah. Allahu Ghafoor, Allahu Rahim, Allahu Yuhibbul Muhsinin, wa Khaliquna, wa Rasiquna, wa Huwa ala kulli shay'in qadir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing, and Brother Liaquat is here with us in the studio. We're talking about the inclination, how teens get inclined to different things. Here, Brother Liaquat said that I gave a few examples of bad inclinations, and now we are about to talk about good things.
Perfect. So about the good inclinations example, a person, what the best example what is given over here, I would say, according to me, of course, is about namaz. A person doesn't have the habit of reciting namaz, okay? So it is told to the person that, you know what, go ahead, recite namaz for one day, okay? Recite namaz for the second day, recite namaz for the third day, for the fourth day, for the fifth and sixth. And on the seventh day, you will see the namaz pulling you towards itself.
All right.
Yes. So after a point, a point will come in his life, maybe on the 10th day, maybe on the 15th day, whatever. Maybe in just 4 or 5 days, a point will come in his or her life that he cannot live without reciting namaz. It would be like, I know people who cried near me just because they missed their Fajr Salah. They couldn't wake up because of the previous night for whatever reason. They got tired and they slept very late for whatever reason. And they, because they just missed their Salah, not intentionally, unintentionally, they couldn't wake up. They cried like anything. And there was Shuhada as well.
Right.
In this line, who used to cry, oh my God, one namaz of mine became qaza. How is it possible? You see?
Right.
So they cannot bear this thing. This is a good inclination.
Because there's this knowledge that, you know, when you miss namaz, actually, there's nothing that can actually, you know, overcome this.
Yeah, it cannot recompensate like that particular namaz, you see.
Yes.
Anyway, so this is about namaz and the other actions as well. Now coming to the obedience of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salatu wasalam. Actually, this is a skill. Making a teen or making oneself inclined towards the obedience of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. It is a skill, just like namaz. Just like namaz. The thing which stops us, example, is about the knowledge. One of the things.
Right.
I'm not saying this is the whole reason, okay? Oh, you know what? Someone who doesn't have knowledge about Ahlul Bayt will not obey Ahlul Bayt. This is not what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
There are people who don't have knowledge about Ahlul Bayt. Example, how they are, and example, how they live their life, but they still do obey. Yeah, they are true lovers and they do obey the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim salam, whatever they say. They are really particular about their Islamic duties, okay?
Hey, you're trying to say that the more knowledge that adds to you,
yeah,
helps you connect.
Definitely, it will help us more. And of course, it's vice versa as well. There are vice versa places where a person knows about the Ahlul Bayt, but still he disobeys them. And there are other reasons, like why is a person knowing the Ahlul Bayt and still is disobeying them? One of the best examples of what we see is on the day of Ashura. There were people from the enemy's side who knew the Ahlul Bayt, who knew properly, like clearly, oh, he is the grandson of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and they knew about his maqamah, his status as well. But still, they went against him.
Yeah.
They went against him, they martyred him as well,
right.
Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. And of course, about Amir al-Mu'mineen, there were thousands and thousands and thousands of people who knew who Amir al-Mu'mineen was, but they still went against Imam Ali al-Islam, and there are reasons, of course.
Right. So here, one thing is clear. Having less knowledge about Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam is not something that you're never going to love them. And having more knowledge about them is, again, not something that you're going to be completely obedient. What gets clear over here is that, however, if you have actual marifat about them, will definitely increase your inclination towards them. We'll explore that more after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Raise your children to have three features: love for your Prophet, love for his household, and reciting the Quran."
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. Brother Liaqat is here with me in the studio. And we're talking about obedience for teenagers. And Brother Liaqat, hey again.
Yes, sister. So I was saying, actually, this is a kind of complicated issue, complicated topic. Why does a person know about the Ahlul Bayt, but still he goes against them? Why does a person doesn't know about the Ahlul Bayt, but still he obeys them? Okay. Of course, the true love towards them plays a vital role. Okay. And no matter how it goes, the first teaching what a parent has to do towards his child is about the love towards the Holy Quran, the love towards the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salatu wassalam. Why? Because if a person has love towards some person, okay, example the Ahlul Bayt over here, the love itself is going to pull the person towards them.
The way you said namaz is going to pull.
Exactly. Over here, example, we have a hadith from Imam Rida alayhi salam, where he says, "Man kana minna walam yut illa falaysa minna." Where he says, whoever says that he is from us, from amongst us, walam yut illa, but doesn't obey Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, falaysa minna. He's not from us. He's not from us, meaning he shouldn't be considering amongst our Shias or also the Ahlul Bayt alayhi muslim. There are few people who are counted amongst the Ahlul Bayt. Of course, not those 14, of course, infallibles. Like example, Salman. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Salmanu minna Ahlul Bayt, which is a very famous hadith from the Prophet, yeah? Example. Okay, so coming back to the topic, when a person has this love towards the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salatu wasalam, the person gets inclined to know about them and also to obey them. This is one of the fundamental rules. What if a person has love towards the Ahlul Bayt and doesn't have an inclination towards knowing them more or increasing in their ma'rifah? This is where a person like a parent or an educator should find, oh, this is a problem. Why is there, example, I have love towards, playing basketball.
Right.
Okay. I know how to play basketball, but I don't go towards playing basketball. Okay. So there is some issue. Why am I not going? If playing is good and
sports
is good.
So there's something wrong with you.
There is something wrong. I don't know. There's some issue in
me.
That
has to be sorted out.
Yeah, exactly. So the parent or the educator, if the parents are not helping out, the teenager should take a responsibility upon himself or herself to find the issue. Okay, if I love the Ahlul Bayt, why am I not going towards learning about them?
Right.
Because the more I'm going to learn about them, the more I'm going to obey them.
Right. And obeying Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam is actually obeying Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Thank you so much, brother, for being with us. Thank you for listening. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another episode, take good care of yourself. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Heroes of the 8-year Holy Defense. Dear listeners, welcome to our special series on the occasion of the Holy Defense Week, marking start of the 8-year war imposed in 1980 by the US through its agent Saddam of the tyrannical Ba'ath minority regime of Baghdad in a bid to overthrow the newly established Islamic Republic. This nefarious plot, however, was foiled by the astute leadership of the father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, who instilled in the Iranians the spirit of jihad and sacrifice to emerge victorious. Today, we will dwell on the soaring spirit of another pilot, in fact, the pilot of a fighter aircraft, Abbas Babai, who achieved martyrdom while serving Islam and the Islamic Republic. Stay with us, please. As we said in our previous editions, during the 8 years of Holy Defense, the Islamic Republic of Iran was facing the might of almost the whole world. In addition to the weaponry supplied to Saddam by the capitalist West and communist East, the repressive Ba'ath minority regime was funded and financed to the tune of scores of billions of dollars by the reactionary Arab regimes, especially the spurious British-created entity called Saudi Arabia. It was thus faith in Islam and the teaching of the Prophet and his infallible Ahlul Bayt that inspired Iran's Muslim combatants to foil the intricate plots of the enemies of humanity. One such intrepid defender of the country was Abbas Babai, who was born in a religious family in Ghazvin in 1950 and after schooling joined the Air Force. In the pre-revolution days, Iran was a client state of the Great Satan, that is US, and American experts and military advisors did not allow Iranians to completely master the skills for maintenance and repair of airplanes. Even the Iranian cadets dispatched to the US for training were not given proper training. Yet, in spite of these restrictions, Apostle Babai, who was sent to the U.S. for training, devoted himself to the mastering of the techniques of operating fighter planes, especially F-14. A pious man, Abbas Babai, during his training years in the U.S., took extra care against being influenced by the decadent Western culture. He used to avoid all unclear foods and drinks and regularly observed his religious rites and rituals. On return to Iran, he became a pilot of Northrop F-5 and trained under McDonnell Douglas F-4 Phantom II and Grumman F-14 Tomcat. He married his cousin Malihe and was based in Khuzestan province when the Islamic Revolution triumphed. He joined the revolutionaries and vowed to devotedly serve the ideals of the Islamic Republic. When the war started, Abbas Babai enthusiastically carried out whatever operations that were entrusted to him. Martyr Abbas Babai was a great man who was raised in the school of martyrdom. He was a fighter whose piety and devotion was a byword. He was a virtuous man whose soul was filled with love, selflessness, and generosity. A soldier who was a brave veteran of battlefields and a great fighter against his own carnal desires. He used to secretly provide financial help to the needy persons, especially colleagues who were from poor families. In 1981, the 31-year-old Abbas Babai, as head of the Air Base Islamic Society, was made commander of the 8th Air Force Base. After showing his competence and his commitment while serving as the commander of Isfahan Air Base, in 1983, he was appointed as the deputy head of Air Force Operation and transferred to Tehran. Abbas Babai, with over 3,000 hours of air flights with different types of jet fighters, spent most of his time in operational fights and war fronts in the west and south of Iran. From 1985 until his martyrdom in 1987, he carried out over 60 war missions with full success. For the speedy progress of operations, he did not limit himself to supervision, but he always took part in war missions to become aware of problems and probable risks. In view of his competence and bravery, he was promoted as Brigadier General in 1987, a few weeks before his martyrdom. While returning from a mission, Abbas Babai was hit by an Iraqi air defense system and martyred. In the morning of Eid al-Adha, he and his co-pilot took off in a F-5 training plane from the Tabriz Air Base and entered Iraq's airspace. After conducting a successful mission, his plane was hit and he sustained injuries. Although the co-pilot managed to land the aircraft, Abbas Babai achieved martyrdom. Thank you.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners. You are tuned in to Iran Radio, broadcasting from Tehran. I'm your host for the next hour. We start off this hour's programs with a Spotlight, a daily program which covers the most important events happening in the world today. After that, we have Youth Station, a program all about young people covering topics all related to youth. Our varied radio productions feature follows next. And A to Z of Life will round up this hour's programs. The program presents an Islamic Iranian lifestyle in a variety of ways, making use of the ayahs of the Holy Quran as well as inspirational poetry and stories. Stay with us for the next hour.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me
event.
Bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, in 1945, the United Nations was formed even while World War II was still raging on. This international organization was created with the goals of ending war and promoting peace, justice, and encouraging better living for all humankind. Well, the organization is commemorating its 80th year, but has clearly fallen short of its original goals. More than 150 heads of states will address the United Nations General Assembly as the Zionist genocide on Gaza is about to hit its two-year mark. Will these leaders stop the genocide or just continue to speak but be impotent on the ground, especially when it comes to the Zionist regime? We'll be taking a look at this 80th year gathering of the United Nations General Assembly on the Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Sedwaz Shah, international law expert and geopolitical analyst out of Geneva. And Syed Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator out of London. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start it off in Geneva. And Syed Mohsen, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres addressed the UN saying that impunity is the mother of chaos. I mean, what are your thoughts on his words? And if this is the case, why has this organization given impunity to the Israeli regime?
Thank you so much for this, starting off with this, right above might. These were the words of President Macron from France to really hit it home. The Europeans are now tired. The world is now reaching a point of exhaustion of the excuses of this Israeli machinations. They are not interested in their own hostages, let alone the safety of the Palestinians, their own people. We know that they killed on October 7th and the events after that and blamed it on Hamas. That all that has come to light, the true face of Israel has become exposed, or it has always been exposed, but now finally the people have lost patience. And you bring it rightly that why it took so long, why it took almost 70 plus years, 80 years, like you said, for this to reach this moment. And unfortunately, this is a sad reality, and I don't really think this is that much of a major threshold. This was just one card in the playbook that, again, I want to be an optimist. It is a great moment. We should be celebrating the progress, and it is moving in the right direction, but it isn't the direction that needs to be there where each Palestinian child should not have to wake up tomorrow with the realization that they may not be there the next day. And that's still a reality we face. I mean, Israel is just thinking about sending another army unit into Gaza, saying it's going to respond to the recognition of Palestine that was rightfully due from the first day. I mean, to be honest, for the UK, let me just be very blunt, they should have recognized Palestine after World War I with the promises that they gave to the people who then supported them. So This is a long time in the making. They deserved it. We'll have to see what is the actual impact in the coming days. But sad to say, Israel is probably going to act more aggressively. And I'd like to see what the international community will do action-wise. Will we do embargo on military? Will we start talking about sanctions? This is the reality we hope to see from the European nations in particular. But as you can see, the United States, I mean, what? Look at the wording. They're saying that if you recognize Palestine, is as if like you're giving support to Hamas. I mean, he's trying to twist words, again, trying to feed into that rhetoric.
Right.
And, you know, that rhetoric is now done with. So
okay.
Let's see what the future action brings.
All right, let's turn to London, get Said Mohsen in on this discussion. I mean, the UN Secretary General said peace rooted in international law is humanity's first obligation. Does international law still exist? I mean, let's talk about Guterres' statement.
It only exists for those who have the luxury of having veto rights. It exists for the Anglo-Zionist Empire because they're the ones that control the UN. And quite frankly, I've got to say, looking at what is unfolding in the UN today, I'm quite sickened. I mean, the hypocrisy, the two-facedness, the double games, the double standards are all accumulated there in these kinds of pitiful speeches. I mean, first of all, let's take the reality on the ground. This will have no effect on Palestinians other than empowering Israel even more to go ahead and wipe them out further, because the Israelis aren't listening to any of this international, these international bodies, etc. The pressure on Israel, who's going to apply the pressure on Israel? I mean, who's going to implement anything that has been said by Macron, etc. today? Who's going to fund any of the changes? I mean, you know, how much is going to actually happen in practical terms? Where's this state going to be? What are the borders? And when will it happen? Is there a timeline? I mean, it's pure theater, Marzia. What we're seeing is just leaders who are terrified that their own positions are under threat now because their own people have woken up to their own tyranny and all the lies that they've been spouting for years about freedom and justice and equality and democracy. All of those lying tatters on the ground in the rubble with Gazan children and their blood and bones. And now what these criminals, these leaders, they're nothing short of criminals, Macron and Starmer, they're all complicit, the Saudis as well. They're just trying to cover their backs and to try and again put the wool over people's eyes to make it look like something's going to happen when they're going back to is rehashing a totally obliterated notion of two states, which is never going to happen. That's the reality. What we're seeing is theater, and we're seeing just another sham, and the UN is again promoting this nonsense.
Hmm. Well, Said Moaz, Guterres has also called for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza now. Will it happen?
The chances of it happening are higher now. And I'm not to say that I do feel my fellow colleague is absolutely accurate. We've seen just only words, and we haven't seen action to the extent that's necessary for the Palestinian people. So, yes, I do feel the pessimism that he is mentioning, and it does seem it's theatrics, but it does have impact. Recognizing a state, especially when you are members of the Permanent Council, Security Council, this is significant. It's something that we can't just disregard as something that has no value. Now, how this will be translating in the coming days, this is something that is yet to see, and you're right.
So let me just jump in here, Said Moaz, sorry to interrupt, just jump in here with, so recognizing a state is important. Tell me what it means exactly, because as Said Mohsen said, If I mean, what is left? I mean, if we look at the West Bank even and the land and the settlements that the Israeli regime continue to build, Gaza, we know the overall situation there.